two crazy porks who host a show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective. Oh, and did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4. Pork therapy, scatolidibop shabadooey. You'll revel in hilarity. It's pork therapy.
Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to Pork Therapy.
Yahoo!
That's a sound I haven't heard in a couple years. I think Yahoo kind of went out of style, didn't it?
Yeah, they got Googleized long ago.
They sure did. Did you hear about this Google lawsuit thing with the pharmaceutical companies?
No.
Google is getting investigated by the feds, by the Department of Justice, because there are ads on Google for so-called like illegitimate prescriptions. Whatever, you know, the Viagra ads and all that kind of thing. So they're actually having to tell their shareholders that they're putting like $500 million in this fund to like avoid
to possibly
deal with the Department of Justice.
Wow.
Yeah. So really unfortunate for the company and their shareholders, and also unfortunate for freedom.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't like spam, but they have a right.
Absolutely. And all they're doing is, I mean, I would love to see ads for all kinds of, you know, online poker might be next, right? Didn't they just ban online poker?
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to see Google be able to show whatever is out there on the internet, and then people make their own choices about how to proceed with that information. There are a lot of things out there on the internet that might be dangerous or are questionable, and it's up to the consumer, or the web browser in this case, to make choices about whether those things are in their best interest or not, right?
Yeah, it's very sad.
Yeah, it sure is. And I guess that's kind of what we're talking about tonight, isn't it?
Consent.
Yeah, consent. So this isn't really a listener question. This is more of a topic that's been on my mind for the past couple of days, I guess.
But you're a listener. You listen to each episode like 5 times.
I sure am. I'm our own biggest fan. No, I wouldn't say I listen 5 times, but I do listen to every Pork Therapy because I want to improve and I want to cut out my ums and uhs, and I want to become a more convincing, persuasive speaker. So I do try to listen and improve.
Excellent. So what's this rant about?
Yeah. So, okay. I've been thinking about this topic ever since I heard a discussion about it on Free Talk Live, and Free Talk Live is a large, nationally syndicated talk radio show, and we'll, of course, link to their URL on our show notes. Ian and Mark are great guys. They host the show 6 nights a week, and then on Sunday they bring people like me in to do another show. But I was listening to one of their podcasts, because they podcast every show in addition to doing it live, and I heard them having a discussion about Age of Consent, and Age of Consent is a subject that comes up on Free Talk Live quite frequently, because often they'll be talking about liberty-oriented things, and of course, we're on the Liberty Radio Network with them, right, Mike?
Mm-hmm.
And we often talk about liberty ideas with liberty themes on our show as well.
We're all about that.
Yeah, yeah, that's our tagline. I mean, we're the show about voluntary relationships, and we want more liberty in our lifetimes. We've both been active for liberty, at least at, you know, throughout the most recent parts of our lives. So clearly these are things that are very important to us and things that we talk about very often. But one thing that came up on this podcast of Free Talk Live that I was listening to was the philosophical question of when, at what age are people able to make decisions? And, you know, they said, I think Mark said, I think it depends on what the decision is. And Ian said, you know, people are sovereign individuals and they can make the choices whenever they decide to, and so forth. But I had something that I really wanted to add to that conversation. And since I didn't hear the show live, I didn't call in and bring it up. I figured, hey, why don't we talk about it on Pork Therapy?
Yeah. I mean, this is a pretty significant relationship. Every single person has it. Mm-hmm. Apparent.
Yeah.
Not necessarily every person has a child, but every person has a parent, so at some point they probably dealt with this.
Mm-hmm. And certainly, even if every person, of course every person has parents, but not everybody knows or interacts with their parents. Or, you know, they could be raised by foster parents, or they could
be that's okay.
An orphan
true.
Or something.
I meant a parent figure.
Yeah.
But
right.
Because any parent figure can take this role of allowing or not allowing them to have sex or
yeah,
take drugs.
Quote unquote,
right. Allowing.
Them. Yeah. and certainly, you know, everyone has people in their lives who would like to be their parent and would like to tell them, you can do this, you cannot do that.
Everybody has that, period.
Everybody,
it's called a government.
Yes. The government does that to everyone by threat of force, saying things like, you know, if you drink alcohol in the U.S. before you're 21 years of age, we're going to hurt you. We're going to put you in a cage. We're going to demand that you pay us money. We're going to take you to court.
I mean, that's a circular. We're going to demand that you pay us money, and if you don't, we're going to demand you pay us more money.
Yeah. And if you don't pay us, we'll
hurt you.
Put you in a cage and hurt you and all that. So that's just one example, of course, but there are many things that the government tells us in our lives, or attempts to tell us, you cannot do this, or you must do this, right? Paying taxes.
Mm-hmm. Everything, actually.
Everything, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, driving without a piece of paper or without, you know... voluntarily giving Joe money while Joe gives you a hamburger voluntarily without getting involving the government, paying the government money.
Without getting a restaurant
a permit
license.
And
I like the way you put it, Mike.
What?
Well, you said, you know, buying a hamburger without involving the state. And to people who have never even thought about this before, they might be like, well, what is he talking about? This is crazy guy talking about. But it's important not to fall into the government's language trap where they say things in ways
that make it sound better.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, exactly. They'll call something a business license, or they'll call something taxation when it's really extortion.
Or theft.
Yeah.
And what would be the other word for a license? Prohibition.
Oh, yeah.
Really,
prohibition, unless we grant you our specific permission.
Oh, that's
permission.
What you meant by extortion. I thought you were on taxation. You're right. That is extortion.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
So anyway, with that whole tangent, we all can relate to this because we all have people in our lives who want to tell us what we can and cannot do according to them. But people own themselves and people control themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And people can be threatened and coerced and told you cannot do this or you must do this, but they can still do those things. It's just that there will be external consequences imposed on them if they do those things, right? So if a parent says to a kid, let's make this more specific. If a parent says to a kid, you cannot smoke pot.
That's factually incorrect.
Right. The kid, of course, is capable of smoking pot and can make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
And if the kid makes that decision, he will do it. And if the parent finds out that the kid went against the parent's wishes and made the decision that was not what the parent wanted, maybe the parent will do some violence to the kid, or maybe the parent will just talk to the kid, or maybe the parent will involve the state. Who knows? But the point is that the kid was able to do that, regardless of whether they were, quote, allowed to do it or not.
Right.
And I think that what I really wanted to say here was that the whole phrasing of allowing kids to do this, or punishing them if they do the wrong thing, or rewarding them if they do the right thing, is really kind of missing the mark. And, you know, the caller that I was thinking about on this podcast of Free Talk Live said something like, oh, well, you think a 10-year-old kid should be able to use heroin or something like that? Well, of course they're able to.
Yes.
The question is, what if you're a parent, if you're someone who cares about that kid, or, you know, maybe even you don't know the kid, but you just have their best interest at heart or something like that. What's your role and what's your appropriate reaction? And I think that was what we wanted to talk about today. So there's a 10-year-old kid who wants to drink alcohol, wants to get really drunk.
Yes.
Let's say that.
And that's common.
Yeah. And we're not just talking about, like, you know, a half a glass of wine with dinner, as some families do. Yeah. This 10-year-old kid wants to go get drunk and be, you know, alone with friends and do, you know, who knows what they would do when they got uninhibited. Maybe they would take a car out for a joyride or something like that, or have sex and make a bad decision,
right?
Something like that. So I think the caller would have said something like, should this kid be allowed to do this? And I think that's the wrong way of looking at it. Why does this kid want to do that thing? And what is the appropriate reaction if you find out that a kid is doing something like that or is contemplating doing something like that?
Yeah, and the contemplating is important because, mm-hmm. as you said, you know, before the show when we were talking about it, prevention and education are the keys here.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the way to approach these situations, we get asked this question a lot as people who are interested in liberty. Well, what do you think should happen to a kid who, a 10-year-old kid who gets drunk or a 13-year-old who has sex or whatever? Well, I think that there are some people in society who would say that you have to put those kids in jail because you have to punish them for doing the wrong things. And I think that is absolutely turned on its head the wrong way to go about approaching a problem like this. I don't think that those decisions that we mentioned are good life decisions. And I also don't think that putting a kid like that in jail who did something like that is going to help them in any way. It's only going to hurt them.
I would also extend that to the parents. Some people would also say the parent of the 13-year-old who had sex should be put in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone being put in jail for this is not helpful.
Right, because if the parent's put in jail, who takes care of the kid? Probably
right.
the state.
Or who educates the kid, or who learns.
Yeah.
Yeah. And who pays for it.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone is victimized in order to pay for it. Yeah. And so it's not a helpful situation to put anyone in jail at the taxpayers' expense.
And more from a liberty perspective, let's say someone was harmed and needs restitution. Who's going to do the restitution if they're in jail?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is the whole concept of punishment versus restitutive or restorative justice. I think on this show we both believe that justice is done when there's a victim of aggression, and aggression means, you know, unwanted violence or fraud, mm-hmm. something like that. When there's a victim and the victim is restored and made whole and has some kind of...
If there's a victim, justice is served when that victim says, to be made whole, I need this from mm-hmm. the aggressor,
yeah.
and the aggressor does it.
Right.
That's what justice is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I think that's the whole point of justice is to, you know, you can't take back the past, you can't reverse what was done, but you can at least make the victim whole. In that case, and it's better, more meaningful, more appropriate if the person who perpetrated the offense is the one who makes the victim whole again, right?
Yeah.
So punishing a so-called criminal or someone who does something wrong doesn't fall in with that concept of restorative justice. It doesn't make the victim whole in any way. It doesn't give anything back to the victim to punish the person who did the offense. And in fact, if the person who did the offense is in jail, how can they possibly restitute
right.
the victim?
In fact, it teaches more violence, right?
Yes.
This person was violent towards you, so we're going to allow you to be violent towards him and lock him in a cage.
Mm-hmm.
What does that help? That teaches you to be violent.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like this weird kind of controlled yeah. violence that the state approves, and the state holds the key right. over all violence that yep. is able to be done. So
via threat.
Yeah, via threat. Okay. But, I mean, that is what government is. It's a monopoly on force. That's mm-hmm. the definition of a government. But I guess we're getting off track here. Mm-hmm. We're talking about restorative justice. And I think the concept of saying, well, kids should not be allowed to make poor choices, like getting drunk, having sex, or whatever, or for that matter, even marginal choices. Like, let's say a 15-year-old wants to run away from home and couch surf for a couple weeks or something like that. Well, that may not be a wonderful life decision, but I certainly don't think they should be put in jail for it. I think they probably need some help.
So what would be appropriate, let's say, post-action, after it's happened, what should be a...
So we can fall back on our example that we thought of before of a 10-year-old kid getting smashed drunk.
Right.
So
and then the parent figure finding out.
And the parent finds out, yeah. So I guess if we wanted to make this really bad, the parent could find out because the kid took the parent's car for a ride and smashed up the car or something like that.
Okay, that happens, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure that does happen. So before we even talk about prevention and education, which I think are important in making
yeah,
sure that that doesn't
example.
Happen in
right.
the first place. So after something like that happens, it could only hurt the kid if they're punished by the state for doing what they've done. They're going to have a record. They're going to have to be forced to go into the criminal so-called justice system, which is an oxymoron. It's an injustice system.
They're going to have to pay government lots of money that they don't have, and that doesn't help anyone.
Government will probably be coming after the parents as well, because they might
try and take the kid away into foster homes, which won't help.
Oh, right. Yeah, that would really hurt.
The person who was victimized, if any, property was damaged when the car crashed into it, maybe, whatever, they're not getting help. Their property's not getting restored. Mm-hmm. Whoever owned the car, they're not getting the car paid for.
Right. So I think in that case, if I were the parent of a child like that, what I would do is really talk to the kid and find out what their experience of that situation was like. It's possible that if they got really drunk and took a car out and crashed it and they're 10 years old, that experience was punishment enough. And they'll say, I will never drink again. That was a horrible experience.
Well, that's possible. But that if a kid said that doesn't get the parent off the hook. The parent shouldn't just say, oh, well, my 10-year-old said they'll never drink again, so we're set. No, you should probably still help them understand why it's so serious.
Yeah, and I think
also, many people our age and older have said, I'll never drink again after a night, you know, a binge, and then they drink the next day or the next week or whatever.
Yep, that's absolutely true. I'm just saying, if it is a kid, it's one thing if the kid says, well, I'm not sorry, I would totally do it again, I loved it, it was really fun.
Yeah.
Then it's one thing, right?
But if the kid's crying and apologetic.
Yes,
and,
yeah. If the kid feels truly bad that he has not only taken someone's property, which is theft, but also possibly hurt someone and endangered themselves.
And ruined the property, and, yeah.
Yep, I think it's your job as a parent to help them understand that.
Yes.
And I think if they really do understand it, then they'll realize what's happened and the gravity of the situation, and they'll want to make the victim whole, and they'll want to meet your needs as a parent, really, for concern over their safety and for their health and well-being.
Yeah, I think it's very possible, maybe probable, that they do not, that someone who so young, who does, you know, who abuses themselves and others so harshly, you know, it's so out of line with the norm, just simply doesn't understand the consequences or the long-term consequences of what they're doing. And maybe just the education alone, even though it's after the fact, will help.
Yeah.
Now, we can talk about education before the fact in a minute, but, you know, saying, oh my gosh, I'm so glad you weren't hurt more severely. I mean, you're going to have to, you know, I'm going to take the allowance that I give you each week and give it to that person to pay for their damaged car, and you're going to feel that pain, but I'm so glad that your legs are not broken or whatever.
Yeah.
And, I don't know, help them understand how severe it could be, could have been if they... It could be if they take those actions again.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think saying to a kid, let's imagine two different scenarios. This whole incident happens, and you as a parent say, I'm really worried and scared for you because I know that alcohol is going to hurt you, especially drinking that much at one time. It can affect your brain and cause you to make bad decisions more easily, like what happened, and it can really hurt your body, it can hurt your liver, it can make you throw up, it won't make you feel very good. I'm sure it didn't feel very fun to do that, did it? And then, you know, talk to the kid about it. I think that approach is a lot more effective than saying, oh, you're grounded. I'm going to lock you in your room and you're going to be sorry, mister. No internet for 2 weeks, yeah. And then the kid's sitting there for 2 weeks reading a book and thinking about when he can do it again, right? Yeah. So
just like in jail.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I think it's just, I think you have to make that connection with a kid. If you have been actively connecting with a kid for the kid's whole life about things like alcohol and saying to the kid repeatedly, hey, you know, you're 10 years old, you might find yourself in a situation where you see this and this and this, like drugs, alcohol, sex, or whatever, and I want you to know that those things can be hurtful, maybe can be good in some instances. Not can be good.
Can feel good for a short while at the expense of hurting your body, hurting your mind, making you feel bad for longer, making you need more, making you out of control,
right,
et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Instead of just saying, well, don't do this because I said so. Don't right. do this because it's for adults only or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, if you just back off for 3 seconds if you want to say that because I said so, think how you would feel if someone said that to you about anything at all.
Yeah. I think most people who are into liberty would immediately have the knee-jerk reaction of saying, well, no, I want to do that. If right. someone tells you, no, you can't because I said so, it's like, it's either, well, why, or...
I'm doing it.
I don't care what you say.
Right.
That's certainly how I was as a kid. You know, when I avoided things, like, I was a pretty straight-laced teenager. I really think that looking back on it, I made good life decisions. But the reason that I did that was not because I was afraid of authority figures, even though there were a lot of them that tried to put fear in me, like my parents and, you know, religious leaders and government school teachers and so forth. There were a lot of authority figures around me who wanted me to be afraid and to not do certain things or to do certain things because I was afraid. I did it because I was judging those things and how they would affect me and whether they would help or hurt me. And I understood that. And fear was not a good motivator for me. It just basically made me want to do the opposite of whatever someone was telling me to do.
Because I
needed more autonomy and I wasn't getting it, and that was why.
It's possible that you were more, you know, above average intelligence and more individualistic than most.
Mm-hmm.
But I think most people, fear is not a good motivator in the long term. It
yes.
might be a good motivator in the short term,
mm-hmm.
but there'll be, you know, people have a need for autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll build up very shortly, and they'll want to break free. They might be scared of government and then thus not drink until they're, you know, when they're 18 or 15 or whatever, or 10. Mm-hmm. And then at the next party next week, and then at the next party next week, and then in the next couple years, they've had 47 opportunities to drink.
Mm-hmm.
They're not really so scared anymore. They're pissed.
Yeah.
And they're going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And it's terribly unfortunate how rare it is for parents in this society to take the time to help their kids understand why certain things might be good decisions or bad decisions, and that they want the best things for their kid long term, mm-hmm. and they care about the kid's best interests, instead of just saying, I told you so,
yeah.
don't do that, you're not allowed to do this, you are allowed to do this, you must do this, or
you'll be punished.
Well, I can
only imagine it's kind of hard
mm-hmm.
to do this, because especially with little kids who are learning to socialize and communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's also a certain phase where kids ask a lot of questions,
mm-hmm.
like an inordinate amount of questions.
Yeah.
So it probably tries the patience. And you might even have told a child numerous times, alcohol is dangerous, it can do this and this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
Or harmful, not dangerous. And then they might still ask, well, why is alcohol dangerous? And you might just get sick of telling them.
Mm-hmm.
And you might say, because I said so. I can understand that. It's not going to help you, but
mm-hmm.
I can understand it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult. It can be very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, parenting requires a lot of energy, a lot of patience, you know, a lot of expenditure of time and energy. And it's worth the investment, from what I hear, for people who really want children and who really want good lives for their children. It's worth putting in that time and energy to take the time to explain things to them instead of just barking orders at them or expecting them to do things without any rational explanation. You know, a lot of the ideas that we've been talking about here, I think I was inspired by some of Alfie Kohn's work. I think we've talked about this on the show before. Unconditional Parenting is a book by Alfie Kohn, and he talks a lot about the whole pop behaviorism and punishment and rewards memes that are present in culture and in a lot of the mainstream parenting books. I mean, there's one part in this book, Wes Bertrand right now is actually reading this book on Complete Liberty Podcast, which you can check out. He just revamped his website, and there's a more interactive aspect to it. It's CompleteLiberty.com. But anyway, this book, Unconditional Parenting, starts off with a preface, I guess, and Alfie Kohn is reading off the names of some of these popular parenting books, and it's like
the names
one after another, it's like, lay down the law, how to get your kid to obey, because I said so, you know, how to punish with style, you know, things like that. And it's just these incredibly it sounds like, authoritarian
it sounds
sounding.
Like it's out of the 50s or something.
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, it's so frightening how, you know, here on one hand, people are saying, well, I love my kids. I want the best things for my kids.
But
you're trying to control your kids. Yeah. You want to let your kids flourish and, you know, help them come to understandings about certain things. You can't force them to be good people. And I think that...
I think like most things, force will have the opposite effect.
Yes.
The more you force them, the less likely they are to be a good person.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the more that you let them be free and learn from mistakes and educate them and help them, mm-hmm. the healthier and happier they're going to be.
Mm-hmm. It brings up this question that I think about often, which is like, in many religions, the motivator to be a good person is fear.
Yeah.
It's like, God will strike you down with a lightning bolt unless you do these good things, unless you give money to the church, unless you give money to charity, quote unquote, unless you give, you know, do charity, do volunteer work, or, you know, treat people as you want to be treated and so forth.
And pray and whatever.
Pray, don't eat bacon and all kinds of stuff like that. So the motivator is fear of punishment, hell,
mm-hmm.
or promises of reward, heaven. Which... most religions, even if they don't have hell, they do have some form of heaven, right? There are a few who have the fire and brimstone hell aspect to them, but not the majority, I think. But most of them do have this kind of paradise afterlife.
Or
you know, you'll be rewarded in the afterlife, at least, if mm-hmm. you're a good person in this life.
Mm-hmm.
And I often think about this, how can you really be a good person if you're choosing something, if you're choosing to be good
because
of fear?
Yeah.
Because of an external influence. I mean, it
you're not
seems
good.
Like...
You're kind of like a puppet. Is a puppet good because the puppet hands flowers to another puppet?
No.
No, it's just someone moved the strings a certain way.
Yeah, exactly. So I often think about that in the context of morality. It's like, if you have a choice and you fully understand that choice, and you're intrinsically motivated to do good... then I think that goes a lot further than a good deed that's motivated out of fear or mm-hmm. desire to just get a reward that's mm-hmm. in the short term or something like that. When you have these rewards and punishments and you never learn to kind of think independently and think critically and use that internal motivation that everybody has, when those rewards and punishments are no longer present, when they're taken away,
or when they get old.
Or when they get older, they become less desirable, then that person has really no moral framework and no desire to act well because they've lost that intrinsic motivation. Yeah. All they know is extrinsic motivator, fear and reward.
No one's pulling my string anymore, so I guess I won't do anything.
Right. Or why should I do a good thing?
Yeah.
Because you know I'm not afraid of the bad consequence anymore.
Yeah.
So I often kind of worry about that, but I guess that's more of our religion bashing that we do every show. So, I don't know. I guess that was pretty much all I wanted to say on this topic. I think it's just really important to remember that kids are
people.
Are people? Yes.
They're different because they're still becoming who mm-hmm. they're going to be, mm-hmm. but they're people, right?
Yes.
And you're a person, so would you like to be treated the way? That we're talking about, that some people treat their kids.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to be told you're not allowed to do this, or you are allowed to do this?
I mean, there's metaphorical examples for someone who's 30 or 25 or 30 or 50 or whoever the age of our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know everything, so let's say you're in a situation where you don't know what's best for you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you're not a doctor and you're feeling ill and you go to a doctor and they tell you, you have to do this.
Yeah.
You should not be allowed to have coffee or whatever the case is. Or what if they put it differently? If you drink coffee, it's going to do this to your body, and in the long term it's going to cost you this much money and this much pain. Then you can make the decision. Mm-hmm. Would you prefer that, or would you prefer them to go to your house and take all the coffee out, and if they catch you drinking coffee, they lock you in your room?
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
It's an analogy. It's not perfect.
It's hyperbolic, but it's analogous.
Yeah.
So... I think anyone who's listening to the sound of our voices can understand the point that we're trying to make. And it's unfortunate. I hear this a lot. Well, you just can't reason with kids. They don't have any critical thinking ability. Man.
Then how do you think they get it?
I think people really, to use George Bush's word, people really misunderestimate kids. they just really think of them as much less reasoning and much less intelligent than they actually are. And it may take patience, it may take a little bit of effort, but I think those things are worthwhile putting in when you're trying to explain to a kid why something would or would not be a good choice in your opinion, and why you have an interest in their safety and health, and why you want them to make the best decisions possible. And
I think this would be a topic for a different show, but maybe how to do that explanation. Because like I said, kids sometimes don't get it, or sometimes just want to go against the grain or go against authority or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So what if you try to do this tactic and you say, you know, alcohol is going to harm you for this way and you, or whatever the topic is, but you explain it and you try to do this and the kid's making it difficult. So maybe another show would be tactics, because I think it
would be the kid making it difficult. Yeah. Even that phrasing kind of sets off an alarm. I think,
well, then let me just say it differently. The kid refusing to heed your advice. So, obviously, the kid is not your property.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, that's not obvious to everyone. But let's say the kid is not your property. However, you're kind of their guide to growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to educate them before they get drunk about the problems they'll face if they get drunk. The long-term path, right?
Yep.
And what I said was they're making it difficult. That meant they're making it difficult for you to teach them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of one-sided. So what I meant was you're trying to explain it and they're refusing to heed your words. And so maybe they go out and get drunk, or maybe they say, I don't care, it feels good.
Mm-hmm.
Or I don't care, you drink, or I don't care, I see the guys on the movies drink, or whatever the excuse is. What if they just keep ignoring you? And so tactics to continue that discussion might be a good episode.
Sure, sure. Well, I mean, just to say this right now, like, if you're binge drinking and telling your kid not to.
then that's the lesson.
I think
maybe
yeah.
We could talk about setting an example, and not just in physical actions, but in, you know, abstract it. So if you're trying to tell your kid, you know, drinking alcohol is bad for you and it does this, this, and this, yet you go and, you know, shoot up heroin.
Yeah.
That's not the exact same thing. You didn't technically say don't do heroin, but you're telling don't put a bad, you know, don't put a harmful drug in your body. I am, though.
Yeah.
So
I don't care about my health, but you should care about yours.
Right.
Right.
And so live the example is one thing, but I think this is branching onto another show.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I think so too. So we will do that again, but I think the overarching point is, like, it's important if you care about a young person in your life, and that's what they are. They're a young person. I know I've said kid on this episode a bunch of times, but they're a young person.
Mm-hmm.
If you care about that person, it's important to make a connection with them and keep talking to them and keep regularly checking in with them and, you know, create the kind of safe space where they can talk to you about things and find out what's going through their mind about certain decisions that they may be contemplating. Listen to them honestly and show them that you love them and care about them and you want them to be happy and healthy. And I think that that'll go a long way, at least a much longer way than would threats of punishment or retaliation or violence or anything like that. Cool. Okay. Well,
thanks
for listening to our show. Yeah, well, that was a great rant. I feel good about that. And of course, if you have any relationship questions, you can email us at questions@porktherapy.com. And that's porctherapy.com is our website.
Or you can call us at 419-PT-LOVE-4. And you can learn all this stuff on our website and do a lot of other cool stuff there, too.
Exactly. You know what? I don't think we even said who we are at the beginning of the show.
We're two crazy porks who have to show. We
Maybe
are
I
Pork
can...
Therapy, and that's Stephanie, and Mike, and
yes.
Wow.
Anyway, you can visit our website, porctherapy.com. That's porktherapy.com with a C. And listen to all our past shows, find out more about us, and also get links to call and email us, right?
You can. That's all correct. And there's lots more to do on our website. And I might as well just do one little bit of, I'll call it listener feedback, but someone just sent us a public message on Pork Therapy that said, hey guys, do either of you have personal Facebook pages looking to get in touch? And I'll just say, speaking for myself, whether I do or not is irrelevant. You can get in touch with me at Mike mike@porktherapy.com, or as you did on our Pork Therapy page.
Sure.
I'll be glad to, you know, talk to you or email to you or, you know, do a show about your question or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And thanks for that piece of feedback.
And thanks for listening to the show.
Yes, indeed. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
They're two crazy porks who host a show. They give relationship advice that you ought to know. Your thirst for entertainment, they will quench, cause Stephanie's a darling and Mike is a mensch. Pork therapy, advice this good is a rarity. It's cool, fun, and introspective. Relationship talk from a liberty perspective, oh. Did I mention you can leave a message, you can voice a question, a joke, a comment, or something more at 419-PT-LOVE-4. Pork Therapy.